It's been said that the days following Major League Baseball's All-Star Game are the quietest on the sports calendar. For a brief moment, there are no MLB, NBA, NFL, or NHL games to watch, but there are still three stories you should know. This week's edition enables me to welcome Pat Forty, National College columnist for Yahoo Sports, back to the program. Hi, Pat.
Hello, Bill. Happy to be on with you.
And we're joined by another old friend of the show, Patrick Ruby, contributing editor of Vice Sports. Welcome back, Patrick.
Great to be here and great to be in the old friend status.
Patrick, you're first up. What's the story that you want to make sure our listeners hear this week?
So here's something people aren't paying attention to. We all remember the Ed O'Bannon federal antitrust lawsuit against the NCAA. In the ruling, it's going to allow schools to pay football and men's basketball players for the use of their names, images, and likenesses. Every academic year, schools are going to be able to offer athletes at least $5,000 that goes into a trust fund that they can then access when they're out of school.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing people don't realize. This is all set to go into effect on August 1st. So all players enrolling in school after July 1st of next year, they're going to be eligible for this. So basically, all these recruits, we're going to see schools actually be allowed to make somewhat competitive offers to them. Now, the NCAA has appealed the O'Bannon ruling as a whole. That could change things. But it's much more likely that that won't happen and that this thing is going to become real in a couple of weeks. And I think ultimately, it's going to be very bad for the NCAA's amateurism-based business model, but not in the way the NCAA claims. As everybody knows, the NCAA's big argument at this point for keeping things the way it is to say, here comes a parade of horribles. Well, look, there just isn't enough money. Even though we're a multi-billion dollar industry, there just isn't enough money. Women's sports are going to get cut. Non-revenue sports are going to get cut. America's going to lose at the Olympics. Cats and dogs are going to live together. The list just goes on and on. But here's what I think is going to happen with this injunction, why it's so clever by the federal judge that put it in. Nothing. Nothing's going to happen. Schools that want to pay a little bit more to have better players because winning matters to them, they're going to do that. The same way they do that now with the coaches, the same way they do it with fancier weight rooms. The schools that don't or can't, they won't. The sports we all love, they're going to stay exactly the same. A little more money is going to go to the players. A little less money is going to go to the administrators and having, you know, Corinthian leather couches in like the locker rooms and the players' lounges.
Pat Forty, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I'm pleased to hear it's not going to be the fall of the Republic when this goes into effect. And Patrick has been among the leading firebrands on this issue for quite some time. And I think it has helped sway public opinion to a degree that the NCAA should be paying players and that players should be getting more than they have gotten historically. And I agree with that. My question, though, I still wonder if this is a slippery slope towards some things that a lot of people aren't quite ready for. For one thing, if there's going to be, lack of a better term, bidding for players, when are players going to be able to have agent representation? I know when agents get involved now, when players are 17, 18, do we want agents involved when they're 15, 16, when the recruiting process starts? I do wonder how many non-revenue sports are going to be suffering in this whole thing. If Patrick's scenario plays out the way he laid it out, then that's awesome. But I do think there's going to be some ancillary effects that maybe people aren't ready for.
I can't believe how radical both of you are. I can't believe either of you are serious. The lads will no longer be playing for the glory of the red and gray or the blue and gold or whatever. College football and basketball will be no more than an arena in which mercenaries do battle. What of tradition? What of fuzzy mascots? The next thing you know, fans will be betting on these contests.
Get my fainting couch. I think I have the vapors. I just want to add, you know, Pat brings up a really good point about agents and sort of what kind of problems might get caused by going to essentially a market economy. I think that's a really important thing. And as much as I've bashed the NCAA and its overregulation of amateurism and its sort of Keystone Cops pursuit of enforcing it, I could imagine a future where you take all these NCAA current compliance departments, a lot of actually good people that work in them, and you say, look, we're not going to regulate people getting paid, but we are going to try to regulate agents. We're going to try to actually protect players, not from money, but from getting ripped off.
Mm-hmm.
That would be quite a concept for the NCAA and its member schools.
All right, I'm going to move on to my story, and it begins with a number because baseball is allegedly all about numbers. From 1959 to 1962, and I remember this, Major League Baseball staged two All-Star games. The idea was to generate money for the players' pension fund, and some of the money might actually have gone there. Tuesday night's MLB All-Star game drew the lowest ratings ever, 6.6. The previous low was 6.8 back in 2012. Two All-Star games was silly, and one maybe one too many. I think we should end the embarrassment, give all the players, not just the ones who aren't All-Stars, a few days off in July. Former Commissioner Selig's goofy idea that he could revitalize the All-Star game by having home field advantage in the World Series hinge on it has not worked. Interleague play gives fans lots of opportunities to see the stars from both leagues play during the regular season. Shut the All-Star game down. What do you think?
I have no problem with that. I used to be an All-Star game lover back in the day, and I will say that was news to me that there were two All-Star games once upon a time. So you scooped me there. But
first time for everything.
I get nothing out of the All-Star game now, and I don't get the feeling very many other people do. As you said, interleague play has really kind of changed that, and all of the ancillary activities that come along with the All-Star game bore me. It's bad when the ESPYs are actually more interesting than the All-Star game.
Patrick, are you gonna stand up for the Midsummer Classic?
I am, but in a limited way. Even if the ratings are low, if baseball can make money off of this game, if it's still working within their business model, I can't really fault them for doing it just because I don't want to watch. But that said, I definitely don't want to watch. And if it went away, and since I'm not making a piece of the action on it, I personally really wouldn't care.
All right, Pat, what's your story?
My story, I was at the SEC football media days this week, and I found out that the most uncomfortable position a college football coach can be in the South, and it's not being down by three touchdowns in the fourth quarter. It is having a reporter ask him in front of a ballroom of people his opinion of the Confederate flag, especially if he is in a state such as South Carolina or Mississippi that has had the flag at the state capitol. And you want to watch a bunch of coaches start sweating and pulling at their collar and trying to navigate their way through a namby-pamby answer to the question, that's what transpired. Thank goodness, again, for Steve Spurrier for just coming flat out saying, I'm so glad we got rid of the Confederate flag. Thank goodness that he was willing to speak his mind about this and have an open conscience about it. But it was amazing to me. Mississippi State's Dan Mullen tiptoed around it. Mississippi's Hugh Freeze trotted out this line that, the Confederate flag stood for something else, but it has been hijacked by people with ill will. Wait a minute, guys. This is an issue where I think it's perfectly fine to ask a football coach his opinion on this. These are influential people within their universities, within their states, and they happen to recruit a whole lot of African-Americans from the South. So they better have an informed opinion on it, and they better be unafraid to say what their opinion is. So maybe I shouldn't have been surprised, but I was a little bit disappointed at the lack of forthrightness and a hard line, basically, from these football coaches when they were asked these questions.
Either, like you said, either they're just trying to be evasive. They're basically like, oh, my God, I got asked a political question. What do I do? Here are some words. Hopefully they mean nothing by the time I'm finished saying them and you'll ask somebody else. But the other part that struck me was that if that's not the case, then these coaches actually seem really ill-informed. Like they never took a history class. Look, I know football is all consuming. And I know if you're an SEC football coach, you're probably thinking football, if not 24/7, 22/7. But it's basic American history. The Confederacy was fighting for essentially a republic of racial slavery. It's not that complicated. And that is their battle flag. And we're still in America living and dealing with all these years later, tons of cultural, political, social ramifications from that. The past is the present is the future in a lot of ways. Even if you're a football coach, you should have a little bit of basic historical literacy.
I thought it was interesting that Spurrier, 8 years ago, he not only said the flag needed to be eliminated, but he also said something about the position that coaches are in these days. He said, I can't talk about political things, but if I could, I would say the flag needs to go. He's saying something about the whole circumstance.
He is, and that's, you know, I just don't want the coaches to feel like they have safe harbor from talking about this because they're football coaches. I think quite the opposite. I think they should feel duty bound to be informed and have a voice in this. And the other thing is just that we have in this country tried in some quarters to pretend racial issues don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Like we've moved past that. And the term post-racial, which I thought was complete bunk. And I'm afraid it took something as horrific as what happened in Charleston to remind a lot of people that, no, there's still a long way to go.
Pat, where does this particular discussion fall in terms of the larger matter of how often coaches at Southern universities have resisted change and how often they have actually functioned as leaders to some extent in bringing about change?
Very good question. The one shining example would be Dean Smith, who not only brought in Charlie Scott as the first African-American player at North Carolina in the 60s, but, you know, was part of a sit-in in North Carolina. I mean, was a very active person in terms of race relations. And I think, you know, there are some coaches that will stand up and will get involved in these sort of things, but far and large, the majority of them would very much prefer not to. And, you know, it's kind of a case of selective influence. They want to have a whole lot of influence where it's going to help their program specifically. But then if there's something of a larger issue, they want to say, hey, I'm just the football coach here.
And look, you're an American citizen before you're a football coach, no matter how much you get paid to be a football coach. Like, it's okay. It's encouraged to, like, be informed, to have an opinion, to have something to say on these things. I think too much in sports, we've gotten to that point of, like, I don't want to seem controversial because I don't want to have to deal with it on the news. I don't want to offend a sponsor, blah, blah, blah. Hopefully we can get away from that. But it would be nice, you know, as Pat is saying, these people who are actually in positions of authority and positions in some ways, even maybe a little bit of a moral authority, could actually wield it and use it.
Our roundtable participants this week have been Pat Forty of Yahoo Sports. Pat, thanks a lot.
My pleasure, Bill. Thank you.
And Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.